You're listening to Good Sentences, the podcast that's guaranteed to tickle your literary ear holes and make you wish you'd listened to dear old mom when she said to put down those lawn darts and learn how to read. And now, here are your hosts, neither of whom listened to dear old mom. This is Craig A. Hart and S.J. Varengo.
This entity that is very, very special. You know, I look at it, and we have groups like that. We have groups of friends who have gone through something. We have, you know, my class from high school, the same thing. We feel very, very, very connected. I do not know why this class feels so connected. It seems unusual to me, but we've been through things together, and we were in school at a very special time with very special teachers and some crazy ones, and we feel very connected. So when somebody says, hey, let's get together, we do it.
Yeah, that's a cool point. I remember I think I told you when we were talking about the virtual one you were going to do that my most recent was my 40th. And yeah. I only see most of those people every 10 years. So it's always a shock to me because in my head, we're all still 18, you know. But the point I was going to make was I remember during my senior year of high school that my class had this feeling that there was something special about this class. I kind of feel like we get it, you know,
yeah.
And that feeling has remained in the 40 years since then. I talk to tons of my high school classmates online all the time. Like I said, I only see them face to face once every 10 years, but we are, you know, I mean, I've got one friend who's like almost as fanatic a Yankee fan as I am. So whenever the games are on, we're like Facebook messaging back and forth through the whole game, things like that, you know. So that connection, when especially if you recognize the specialness of it in time, it's a golden thing. It really is.
And to bring it back to character, I think that whatever happens when you have a group that you are so close with, whatever that bond is, you were, you know, hiding from the Nazis in an attic. You were.
Right.
You know, working as a spy, you know, there's you were in the armed forces, you were on a sports team, you were in a play production together. You feel a connection that took you beyond just being friends because
right.
you created something together. You fought for something together. You protected something together. And that makes an interesting plot right there. A group coming back together. It's it's funny. The only thing that's coming to my mind right now is a play called Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean. And it's about four friends who agree to meet in like 10 years or something. And they were together at the last place that James Dean ate. I don't know if it's been 10 years or 25 years. They don't recognize each other immediately. And
right.
one of them has actually changed sexes. This was in the 80s, early 80s, I think this play was written. You know, you're sort of like everybody's had a different experience from that moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you come back together and try to do something. It changes the structure, and it can change the hierarchy too. I have one class member who I feel always tries to bring the conversation back to herself.
There's always at least one.
God, I hope she doesn't listen to this. But I find it interesting because it's like none of it matters. But anyway, I think that we do go back to plot. So how did you guys plot first?
No,
we tend to be pantsers even when we're co-writing.
Yeah.
Even when you're co-writing.
Yeah.
So when you're co-writing your first draft, you don't know. Where do you hand off chapters?
Yes, we do.
Mostly, that's how we do
primarily
it.
Primarily, how we do it. What we do is basically just write the chapter, and then the next guy picks up from where we left off. The times when we say, because of what I'd like to do here, we're going to have to go back and make a change here.
Right.
But as far as planning ahead with our most recent book, which is now available on Amazon.com, Serenity Reborn, go out and buy a copy today. We did a lot of just like I would do things intentionally to catch Craig off guard to see what he would do with them.
Oh, that's
and,
fun.
And he was universally brilliant. Every time I did that, oh, he came back with something so much better than I expected. And yeah, we are militant pantsers. We really are.
Well, this is why it's so exciting when we get a chapter back from the other person, because we literally have no idea what it contains beyond what where we left off. Like, what did he do this time?
I have to, you know, I'm sorry to say I have not finished reading it, but
no, that's all right.
I cannot, I'm fascinated now because I'm partway through it and I cannot tell. Don't feel a shift in writer at all. I mean,
we developed
we're shifting
that
now with characters, but we're not shifting writers.
Yeah, we developed that when we were writing our Spyco novellas.
Together. Sort of our practice project.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
I think you have very similar rhythms and you have very similar voices and it works. I mean, or at least you manage to in this. It's really interesting to me. I find it fascinating because I've co-written songs, but I've never co-written a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you have to find, and this is a compliment to Scott, I think you have to find a pretty special person to do it, because it wouldn't work for everybody. But
no.
With Scott, just speaking from my perspective, not only is he pretty easygoing about the projects, but you know, I think we do think a lot alike, at least you know, in terms of writing and the craft, and he is able to keep up with whatever. I can echo what he said about me. When I send something back, I don't have to worry about what he's sending back to me because I know it's going to work.
And that's a great gift. You're not fixing the chapter before. You're going and write the next one.
To put out this dumpster fire.
Every time we send a chapter, it usually is accompanied with a note that says, well, look how bad I screwed it up this time.
That's perfect. You know, it's like I would love to be able to write with somebody because I think I think it would be fun to a certain extent, but I don't know who that would be.
One good thing about writing with a co-author, I will say, is that you have somebody to talk things through with.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like, or if you're stuck on something or if you can't remember something from earlier in the manuscript, hey, Scott, what did we name that guy? or whatever, you know, or whatever it is, you've got two heads working on the same thing. And so it can be useful.
Sometimes I think I bought all these plot books.
Yeah.
And then I didn't read them.
And I bet I know why. The plot was too boring.
There you go. And there was no character to drag me in, you know? There was nobody saying, hey, what about... I look at that and I look at Dad saying, you know, I put a guy in a situation. And he was very good with his first lines. I find it, you know, I still find myself wondering if I... Like right now, I'm like, wonder how much I know plot. Wonder if have you ever pre-plotted a book, either of you?
Never.
The closest I have come, and probably will ever come, is I plot as I go so that I can look back and get a bird's eye view. So I'll outline what I've already written.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I find that helpful because it does give me, again, a bird's eye view of what's happened. So I can go back on chapter one, chapter three, and then I can start tying those loose ends together. But I don't, if I do plot ahead, it's only one or two chapters just to, so I can see kind of a destination.
So you know what you need to accomplish in the next chapter.
Right.
There's a lot of times that really good stuff has come up as we've written that we had no idea when we started that's where we're going to go with it. And it's ended up, I think in Reborn, it ended up making it a completely different story. I mean, we actually, how far were we in before we scrapped everything and started it over?
Third of the way through. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because we changed who the main character was going to be, the main supporting character, completely around, and it worked way better that way.
Do you have any idea of the theme, or is that something you sort of discover after you've done your first draft? Because I'm discovering it at the end of either halfway through a book or all the way through a draft. I sort of go, oh, that's what this is about.
That's what this is about, yeah. I think with Reborn, we ended up with a really strong theme, but I don't think at any point in the process did we think about that.
Yeah.
In retrospect, the theme to me was obvious, but at no point in the creation of it was I writing thinking, this is what I want to talk about. You know, it just, mm-hmm. we talked about what happened and it ended up luckily having a theme.
I know, I'm like looking through this going, wow, that's what this is about.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's going to really inform the next draft because that's what this is about.
Mm-hmm.
So I can, and but it's something that I tend to uncover as I read through whatever draft I've finished. And then I realize that it'll be very interesting to see if once I've published several books, if people see running themes and, yeah. and if they see them as being what I see them as being.
Right.
Because I always want to be in the back of the room when they teach my dad, because I would come home from, like, I remember coming home when we were studying Grapes of Wrath and I was like, okay, you got to talk to me about symbolism and, you know, all of these things, you know, that I'm being pathetic, fallacy, and like all this stuff with the weather, create, you know, the character are having the same emotions. I just didn't understand it. And he said to me, people didn't write it. And then people started discovering it. So people started writing it.
Right.
Hmm. And I thought, that's fascinating. So that's why I always want to be in the back, because I know that he didn't consciously create weather that reflected a character's inner life or any of those other things that I learned in school.
Right.
He didn't consciously make anybody a Christ figure. He didn't consciously, I was at Catholic school. He didn't consciously, you know, do any of these things that we read into stuff.
Right.
And if he did it, I don't believe he did it consciously. And so I always want to be in a classroom where they're studying him to discover whether or not they think it's there.
There's a writing theme going around that I've seen a few times where in one cartoon panel, like the literature teacher is like, the curtains were blue to reflect his right. his melancholy and blah, blah. And then gets to the end, the writer's left thinking, I just meant that the curtains were blue.
That's it. They were just blue. I like the color. You know, and then you look at some writers, and some writers are more engaging in certain stories than others, or some stories are more engaging to us. And when we go back to talking about literary fiction and fiction, genre fiction, and I think about Thomas Hardy, and I hated Return of the Native, and I love Tess of the D'Urbervilles.
Hmm.
Why? I don't know. Tess was a young girl, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
You know? Yeah.
That's something you could relate to.
Yeah, I just was more attainable. You know, The Grapes of Wrath was interesting to me because my dad was like that. You know, he was a hobo and he was picking fruit and he was doing every job he could do, mining and everything. So he was on the road at that time. He was living in similar situations. I taught literature to fifth and sixth graders for 2 years, and they really wanted the excuse to read the first Harry Potter. So we read the first Harry Potter, but I went through and found all of the Greek mythology. And so Minerva was the goddess of war, and it's the first name of Professor McGonagall. And that leads you all the way to the final book when she makes the statues fight.
Right, right.
Well, it's been a fascinating discussion on plot. I think the idea, though, behind plot, character, whatever, is if you have a good story, it's a good story regardless of what, you know, the label of what somebody may put on it. I do want to say one thing about talking about writer's block, et cetera. And one thing that I run into when I'm talking to people about writer's block or if they're complaining about it, a lot of times, and I've experienced this myself, is the pressure that we put on ourselves. And I think one thing that writers can be mindful of is to be gentle with themselves in the process. And it's okay if you don't know where you're going at all times. That is part of the process. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you as a writer. It doesn't mean you even have writer's block, for example. It is a part of the process. And so, you know, being gentle with yourself and letting yourself experience that can be the key. In my case, when I recognize it, then I'm able to then grapple with it.
I like that idea of being kind to yourself. And I think that sometimes I forget that I'm an artist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that creating You know, it's like that. I create worlds and people. What's your superpower? You know,
right?
Yeah, right.
And that we are massively creative. We're creating human beings and out of nothing.
Right.
Like, that we're creating them because we decide they should exist on the page. That issue means that sometimes we just have to be gentle, especially when things are chaotic around us. And I think that we just need to give ourselves a little bit of a break and say, you know, remember why you started. Yeah. Like, what was the thing that started you telling a story? And just go do that for 10 minutes. Leave the book aside. Leave that work aside and just go do fun.
Right.
You know, the guy was walking down the street and a car stopped and the window rolled down. And just write the story, whatever that is. Go find yourself a prompt and just write something, even if it's three paragraphs, and just say, just to feel like a writer again, right. Especially when you're reworking something like I am. I'm feeling like a writer, but I'm not feeling creative. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling technical. And I wrote this thing the other day. What did I say? I said, rewriting is your driver's test. And writing is like, I had a couple of different ifs and I'm like trying to remember what I came up with. One was like standing at the top of a mountain with skis on and nobody in front of you. And, you know, or a roller coaster that you've never seen and you've never been on. It's, you know, that's what that first draft is. That first draft is magnificently fun and free. And the other is like, do everything absolutely perfectly. Do not take your hands off the wheel.
Right.
Make sure you look over your shoulder and you signal and you check your mirrors in whatever order you're supposed to do that in. It's instinctive now, but like you have, you know, it's a very specific thing you're doing when you're rewriting. You're going in because you need to, you know, even if it's just you need to make sure that Jane is called Jane and not Jill through the entire
book. Right.
You know, whatever it is, it's a technical thing and it's not as freeing as a first draft. And I think those of us that are struggling with writing right now need to just go write a first draft, even if it's three paragraphs of a first draft. You don't have to write the whole book unless you want to.
Right.
Just get yourself writing something and remember why you started.
I do thank everybody for listening to the Good Sentences podcast. I think Captain Angelique Lamore way longer than we ever thought. So I apologize for that. We get really greedy with your time.
I enjoy you guys. And I learned from you today. So, you know, I've been taking notes. So I try to learn from everybody I talk to. I try to learn from my experiences. And so it was really kind of cool to have this opportunity and get a chance to pick your brains about some things, too.
I can visualize the notes in your margin. One says, Craig, very insightful. And one says, Scott, kind of adult, I think.
One is, never talk to these two again.
there's no personal reactions there. I'm not critiquing you. I was looking for help as I move forward because I'm determined that I'm going to take a stab at one of these two books.
And you will. We both have faith in you. We know that's going to happen.
Absolutely.
But, you know, definitely keep us up to date and, you know, we'll get as greedy with your time as you'll let us. Hopefully we can have you back on again.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
All right. Thanks so much, Angelique.
Take care.